You're listening to Sideshow Network.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great week for It's the Real.
Woo!
Another great ad from our friends over at Dollar Shave Club.
Now, if people don't know what Dollar Shave Club is, and there are probably a couple people out there who do not know what Dollar Shave Club is.
You're going to tell them.
I'm going to tell them.
Go ahead.
It is a monthly subscription service where they will give you, for a small fee every month, all of your shaving needs in a box to your door.
Like what?
Like the razor.
Yeah.
Like the blades.
Yeah.
Like some...
shaving cream, like the aftershave, right? All that?
All of that.
Here's the thing, Jeff. If people have been listening the past couple weeks, they've heard you talk about you started off with an electric shaver, you've transitioned into shaving like the rest of us do with a real executive blade that they sent you. And how's it been going?
Good. Like, okay. Like very no cuts.
Like very good, right?
Very no cuts.
Now here's the thing. I've listened to you each week. I've heard you testify to the amazing nature of these things. And so this week I happened to run out of shaving cream on my own, right? And I used what's it called? Dr. Carver's shave butter?
Yeah.
Okay. Now here's the thing.
Dr. Carver's shave butter.
Obviously, you know, you take these things with a grain of salt, and maybe even I did. And then I used that shave butter. I swear to God, it was the best shave I've ever had in my life. It felt like that spray that people would spray just to take like hair off their arms.
Feels like Nair?
It felt like what I imagined Nair to be. This is the best shave I've ever had in my life, and I promise you this is true.
Here's your chance to see why over 3 million members like us, Eric and me, Jeff, love Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality of all their products. Now you can get your first month of the club for free.
What?
Just pay shipping. After that, it's just a few bucks a month. No long-term commitment. No hidden fees. There's no reason not to do it. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/waste. That's dollarshaveclub.com/waste.
W-A-S-T-E.
Yeah.
Jeff, what did we not do this week?
We did not do what we said that we were going to do.
What was that?
We were going to put out the video for our new single, Dave Matthews Band.
Okay, so we shot this video. We went to the trouble of getting a crew and a big director and a big set and a lot of, like, toys on set. And we made sure that the video was going to be ready to drop. And then what'd we do?
We did not put it out.
We did not put it out. Okay.
Right.
But instead of doing that, what if we told the people right now?
Gave them a little tease.
So pull over.
Pull over.
New York City. Tri-state area. Kids in Ireland who were doing drugs off the picture of the Pope last week. David Cho. If you pulled over, lower your windows. Because what we're going to drop is going to blow those windows apart. New It's the Real! Dave Matthews Bands!
Yeah,
let's get into it.
Disrespectful money, paper keeps cutting my hands. Counting white faces, I got Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands. Disrespectful money, paper keeps cutting my hands. Counting white faces, I got Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands.
Hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up, hold up.
What's that?
They say gunshot means forward. And liquid means rewind.
What's that?
You requested, so we rewind.
New It's the Real.
Exclusive.
Dave Matthews Bands.
Disrespectful money, paper keeps cutting my hands. Counting white faces, I got Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Bands. Disrespectful money, paper keep cutting my hands. Counting white faces, I got Dave Matthews Bands.
Bands to make
my God. Oh my God.
Damn, son. Where'd you find this shit?
SoundCloud.com/itsthereal. Jeff, can we do it one more time?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it.
Paper keeps cutting my hands, counting white faces. I got Dave Matthews Band.
Band to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Band.
Band to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Band. Disrespectful money. Paper keeps cutting my hands, counting white faces. I got Dave Matthews Band.
Band to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Band.
Band to make a dancing Nancy.
Dave Matthews Band.
Bought a yacht, but I need a lot to park it in. Fran Tarkenton, all over carpeting. In a black cardigan, I'm out of the rent. Booking info in the bio just to get out of bed. Got a slander Lin Miranda, I'm tired of seeing Hamilton.
All right, that is enough. That's enough.
Are people still listening?
Song is called Dave Matthews Bands.
Yeah.
Check it out in full whenever we put it up at soundcloud.com/itsthereal. Check that video out, directed by Ian Rexara Wolfson.
Hype Williams.
That
Dave
music,
Myers.
That music, remember, is produced by Greg Mayo. Jeff, now that we got people's attention,
yeah,
who do we have on the podcast today?
Today we have Wayno Clark.
Wayno Clark is the manager of Dave East and partner in Triangle Offense, which is the new label over at Def Jam.
Yeah.
Shout out to them.
Shout out to Wayno.
We were the first ones to talk about it.
We were the first ones to be about it.
Wayno talks about a lot of stuff. I love this episode. As I've been saying, it's equal parts inspiration and amazing Rockefeller stories. This is one of my favorite episodes. Jeff, when should we get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Hannibal Lecter, a.k.a. Always Strapped.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Pull Up on a Kid, a.k.a. No Wait, It's a Cardigan.
Yeah. Yo, it's Wayno, and I don't know what to say.
Yeah. It's a waste of time, but it's the real.
Wayno, what's happening?
What's going on, man?
Everything is good. Thank you for showing up.
Oh, man, thank you.
On time, too.
Yeah, on time.
On
crazy.
Time. That's what people know that about me.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
Well, they know two things about you. One, mm-hmm. you show up on time.
Right.
And two, that you got Dave East under your wing.
Right.
What the people should know, by the way, before we get into all that,
yeah,
is that this is, you know, being videotaped for fullscreen.com.
From our home. Yeah, you can actually go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal.
Yes.
Find all of our episodes there for your viewing pleasure. You can see inside of our apartment. You can now see all of our cereal boxes.
That's
and
right.
Mac and cheese boxes right behind Wayno.
Actually, the most important thing is that you can see what's on Wayno's head right now, which is a limited edition. Gray Rockefeller hat. Rock Nation hat, yeah.
I'm wearing a French Montana limited edition dad hat, and he's got his monkey Julius next to him. So I feel like
right.
My
we're
hat game,
today.
Yeah.
He's got elite hit, elite curl.
That's, yeah. Yo, curl god.
Curl god.
Right? So we got our business out of the way.
Yes.
Now, we're breaking news here. I know it's going to be broken elsewhere, but on this podcast,
we're not
excited.
Breaking news, yeah.
Because we have known this for a while. Even before Dave showed up on the podcast, you have some business to announce.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, we've done a partnership with, you know, with Def Jam, you know what I mean, a joint venture where we have our own situation over there, you know what I mean? Like how the old structured deals used to be, where you're able to build a real foundation, you know what I mean, with Def Jam. So, you know what I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Man, thank you.
Secondly, people should know this is very rare.
Yes.
This is not the case, like, for everybody,
nah.
And certainly not in 2016.
Nah, not at all, man.
So when does he start going on tour with DMX and Ja Rule?
So as we can put it together,
So you know what I mean? How did you... Okay, everyone knows the affiliation with Nas and mm-hmm. Mass Appeal. How do you transition that into a partnership over at Def Jam?
Well, I mean, for us, the biggest thing was, like, you know, we always wanted to take things to another level, right? So we were just trying to figure out, you know, what's going to be the next move for us. Because if you look at Dave's career, it's been kind of predicated on, like, catalog and the moves. You know what I mean? It's like... You get the music, and then you see this thing we've done, and they're like, yo, you just did that, or you just did this. So it was like, we had a lot of different labels coming to us, you know what I mean? We felt like Def Jam was a really good fit because, you know, tradition. You know what I mean? Like that logo, that brand means a lot. And you know what I mean? They had a lot of good opportunities for us. You know what I mean? Not just him being an artist, us doing a partnership, a joint venture. They gave us an opportunity to build something with them for years to come. You know what I mean? So that was what they were talking about, as opposed to everybody else.
In terms of like branding, or in terms of like, what do you mean for years to come?
I mean, with us having a joint venture, it's like, you know, it's Triangle Offense, you know what I mean? So me and Dave, you know, we're partners in the label with Triangle Offense. So it's like, now we're going to be able to build that out, you know what I mean? And for me, labels aren't what they used to be as far as...
What?
as far as the crew, you know what I mean? It used to be like just a crew. Like, we're thinking TV, we're thinking, you know what I mean, tech, we're thinking all these different things where we can implement our company into Def Jam system and just build these things with them.
And
you know what I mean?
Did you find that Def Jam understood what you had to say more than any other label?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, shout out to, you know, my man Steve-O, my man Bartles, all of them over there. Like, for them, they understood. They basically said, like, all right, we see what y'all guys are doing. We want to just know how we could take it up with y'all. You know what I mean? Like, how we could help, how we all can go to another level. So for us, it was like, it was easy for us. We had all these as dreams, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's a reality, because they presented us with some good things on paper and good conversations in good faith. You know what I mean?
I think, too, it helps that you have a long history in this business, right, and you know what to look out for.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are people who do get screwed in these situations. Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, listen, situations.
In the music industry, it's crazy.
Right, you would never think that.
Yeah, now we're breaking more news.
Yeah, I mean, like, with that being said, it was just like, it's been a learning process for me. You know what I mean? Over the years, it's like, I used to deliver mail to Def Jam.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, just building out that story along with Dave's story, we both have stories of humble beginnings and a lot of grind, you know what I mean? And all of these things we've done over the years have got us to these moments. So it was like a lot of that played into it as well. It's all about what you do with your opportunity, you know what I mean? And how your team is structured, from your lawyer to your business accountant to your A&R.
To your mailman.
To your mailman, your assistant, yeah, everybody. Yeah. So like for us, it was just like, yo, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? We told them what we would like to do. They told us what they wanted to do. And now, you know, we're trying to see what we're going to do for years to come.
It just sort of in general, how long did this process take for you guys going to a label and getting it done?
Oh, man, it took us. It took some time, man, because these things have to be thought through thoroughly. You know what I mean? A lot of people, you know, in this culture, they think that it just depends on how much money they got for you. Like, man, whatever they got, if it's more than them, then we're taking it. It's not really based on that. For us, it was like, does this make sense? You know what I mean? Is this something that fits Dave's branding? You know, is this something that we can look back a year or 2 years from now, like, yo, what did we do? Or did we do the right thing? So all of these things came into place. You know what I mean? Like I said, we had every label. Every single label was on us.
Yeah.
But because they knew that we were coming to not an end, you know what I mean? Like, we're still partnered up with Mass Appeal, you know what I mean? They're gonna help us do a lot of awesome things, but they knew that, you know, there was a way in. So everybody's coming at us from every angle, and we just had to make the decision best for us,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, how does Mass Appeal fit in? Like, so are you guys, is that like the incubator label, and then you guys go through Def Jam for bigger things, or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing with Mass Appeal is like, they offer a lot of different things. Mass Appeal and Decon are one of the same. You know, Decon is a really big advertising agency. You know, man, shout out to my man Peter Bentonbender. He runs that as well as Mass Appeal. So it's a lot of different opportunities with sponsorships and, you know, things of that nature. So it's like, for us, we like, yo, if we could keep them, plus that's Nas, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's Nas' thing, and he's been tremendous to us. You know what I mean? Like, Nas has been nothing but great to us as a partner and as a friend. You know what I mean? Like, we've really grown a relationship with him over these past couple years.
And you get discounts at Sweet Chick.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which really is the most important thing. Yeah.
And on history. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, it was like, you know, what made sense for everybody collectively. It wasn't a decision that was just on our behalf. You know what I mean? We weighed in everybody else too, because, you know, Mass Appeal, like, they helped us out early on. They believed in us and was like, yo, how could we all do this together?
That's pretty great.
Did they have a say in terms of what labels, like, they were interested in as well? Like, because
I mean, not really. I mean, somewhat, but I can't say that specifically. They just was like, yo, whatever decision y'all want to make, we're gonna support y'all. And the way they've supported us thus far was like, that's fair.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's really fair.
Yeah. How was it keeping this out of the news, like, off, man, everyone's radar? Because not only is this something where, like, oh, someone can spot you coming out of the building, or people, it's just everyone likes to talk. And by the way, when people get deals done, you want to talk about it, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you told us, and, like, we told everybody. We were just like, yo, you guys can't tell anybody.
But, no, but even for us, like, when we... In between, when we sold our TV show, we had to sit on that news and not tell anyone, because there were a lot of things that could have happened. And,
right.
And people think, then, that because you're not saying anything, that nothing's happening.
No, I mean, here's the thing, man. It's like, I got patience. Like, yo, it's taken us... Me, personally, this is the first year. I've been in music since I was 18. I'm 33.
Right.
You know what I mean? So this is the first year in my career where I've done things that I can actually see. It's like, yo, this really worked.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It took me a long time. So I was like, yo, all right, if I got to be quiet for a couple months, it's not a problem. You know what I mean? Even Dave, like, Dave understands that. You know what I mean? It was tough because we live in a era of assumption. Right. Mm-hmm. So when I took the picture, I went up to see Jay-Z and Lenny S one day, you know, just to holler at them, see how they was doing. Everybody was like, oh, Dave East is going to Roc Nation. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
why
would they think that? Right. It's like, but of course, everybody knows my affiliation with those guys. Yeah, you know, they're my family. I always say it would be no triangle offense without Roc Nation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they were just supportive of everything that we were doing. And they were like, yo, you know, this door is open-ended. If you ever need help with anything, you know what I mean? It's not necessarily what they can make off of us and what we can make off of them. They're just like, yo, if you need the knowledge, you know what I mean? If you need access to certain things, that's what Jay and Lenny had just opened up to me about. So, you know, every time we took a picture with somebody, it's like, oh, they signing with them, or they with them. Or, and even still to this day, like, I listen to people that don't, it's a lot of people that don't know I'm Dave East's manager. You know what I mean? So they be like, yeah, you know, he just did this deal, and it's like this amount of money, and then I'm like, oh, word, for real? Like, I had no idea. You know what I'm saying? So it was pretty tough, but I think we held through.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, man.
So let's go back to the very beginning. Right. You're from the Bronx, right?
Well, I was born in the Bronx.
Yeah.
I was born in the Bronx. I can say I am from the Bronx, you know what I mean? In some sort of capacity. I was born in the Bronx. I lived there till I was about 10. Moved to Maryland for a year, and then moved back to the Bronx, and then moved to Harlem.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But for all intents and purposes, you're a Harlem guy.
I'm a Harlem guy.
So
I'm
you get back guy. In middle school years?
To the Bronx?
Well, yeah, when you moved back to New York.
Yeah. Well, I moved back to New York. I went there for the seventh grade. I went to Maryland for the seventh grade, and I moved back for the eighth grade, and then by ninth grade, I moved to Harlem.
So what do you have any idea what you want to do in your life in middle school going into high school?
Hell no. Nah. Hell no.
You were a ninth grader.
Right. I mean, yo, exactly. I mean, for me, I wanted to be a basketball player.
Like,
yeah, man, because, I mean, the first time I ever played, like, organized basketball was when I moved to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder because I was a city guy. I moved to Maryland. They made fun of the way I talked, everything. So I was like, yo, I want to be a ball player. Like,
what's one word that, like, you said that they just, like, did not get? Were you saying, like, John
Blaze?
Sneakers.
Sneakers. What they say tennis. In Maryland, yeah, they say tennis. Like,
yo, Maryland's whack.
I'm not going to call y'all whack, but, you know what I mean? It was kind of crazy. It's like, they made fun of everything. I mean, it would be the same thing for a kid moving from Maryland up to New York.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't understand the culture. We don't understand how they're brought up. So it was like, it was different for me. Like, I was a city kid. I couldn't just walk to the corner and go to the store.
Yeah.
I actually got in trouble for trying to walk down the highway to go to, like, a 7-Eleven. But I'm just thinking it's a store. I was able to go to the store from the time I was 5 years old till I moved. You know, so it was really different for me, but I had no idea what I wanted to do at that time. I did want to play ball, but I didn't even understand what the word career meant until I was about 25 years old.
Whoa.
Honestly.
Man.
For real.
So, and who is in your family that's going back and forth, you know, from the Bronx down to Maryland to Bronx and then to Brooklyn with you?
My mom.
Or not to Brooklyn, to Harlem, sorry.
Well, my mom, it was my mom. My mom had my little sister around that time, so my mom and my little sister's father were together, and my grandmother. You know, my grandmother, she had moved out there with us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came back, we actually came back and we had to go into a shelter system.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was really tough for me because, like, I just didn't know anything about the shelter system. I didn't know how it was to help. I just thought we were homeless. I mean, we were, in fact, homeless to a certain extent. But it was pretty tough for me. So we went through that and we came back to the Bronx. And my mom, like, she was like, yo, the first opportunity we get to get out of this, we're moving. And the first place we got to look at was in Harlem. You know what I mean?
And what'd you know about Harlem?
Well, I kind of knew somewhat about Harlem because my grandfather was from Harlem. So I was going to Harlem as a kid, but I wasn't really crazy about it. Like, I had uncles that lived in Harlem and I had my grandfather. So I used to spend like some of my summers out there and everything, mm-hmm. but I didn't really like it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It was like the Bronx was everything to me when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now like they've got an Applebee's there.
Right. Like. Y'all in Applebee's. Are they paying for the cameras in there? Yeah,
like, I wish. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Right.
Did you grow up a big Yankees fan?
Nah, man. I mean, well, I can say somewhat. I really didn't know much about baseball. I mean, I did collect baseball cards as a kid, mm-hmm. but that just was something to do. They was only a quarter, and it came with a stick of bubble gum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I collect baseball cards, but I really wasn't into baseball because nobody played baseball around where I live. I mean, even where I lived at, nobody really played basketball like that. You know what I mean? I grew up in a neighborhood where it was nothing but Jamaicans. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they play soccer and just chill. You know what I mean? Other than that, they didn't really do much. So I started playing ball. Like, I kind of started playing ball going to Harlem, you know, to see my grandfather because my uncles, they play ball. And that's all everybody does in Harlem is play ball.
Right.
Play basketball is what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I didn't really think anything much of baseball. I started to like it a little bit later on, around like 10, 11, my father started taking me to games.
Yeah. Because like, you know, I feel like the Bronx is so, it is part of New York,
mm-hmm.
but it feels so separate. Like even to go to a Yankee game feels like, so like to grow up there, which we didn't, like we grew up like around Yankees fans. We were up, you know, in Westchester.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you would think that would be everything for you guys. Like, Yankee hats, Yankee pride, like, fuck the Mets, like, whatever.
Yo, I mean, when I was a little kid, you know what was crazy? The Bulls were the shit at that time.
Yeah.
So it was like, everybody was a Chicago Bulls fan.
Thus,
you know
triangle
mean?
Offense.
So, exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I didn't even care about baseball when I was a little kid at all. What really made me started to like baseball was Ken Griffey Jr. because of his sneakers.
Yeah, well, you mean his tennis.
Exactly. But that's what really made me start to like baseball. My pops took me to Milwaukee Brewers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Brewers versus the Yankees. And I had never been to a baseball game. And that's when I kind of started to like baseball. Mm-hmm. It was like insane because they give you the free socks. People are throwing the socks on the field. You know what I mean? It's just it was a crazy experience. So I started to like baseball a little bit then. But basketball is my heart.
Mm-hmm. And did you play basketball in school then?
I played for a team. I never played for the school team. I played for like leagues outside of the school. You know, your parents pay for you to be in them. I played in stuff like that. But I never really got good enough to play for a school team. You know what I mean? I was all right.
And you're about how tall?
6 feet.
And in high school, did you have like a spurt at some point where you like grew to 6 feet?
Yeah, well, like, man, I was really short until I got to the ninth grade. And then I grew to 6 feet. Around like when I was like 15, mm-hmm. and then I never got taller ever again. Like, you know what I mean? So I had a little growth spurt, but I don't think I took care of my body properly. Like, sometimes I sit back, I'm like, man, I should have stretched more. Oh. You know what I mean? Like,
by the way, that's not like how I worked.
Right. Yeah. Jeff hung upside down. Like,
please. And Jeff took a lot of naps, and that was about it.
Right, man. But yeah, you were
convinced that you were gonna be in the league
I really, yo, listen, in my heart, I really was like, yo, I'm going. You know what showed me I wasn't going to the league? When I moved to Harlem, right?
Yeah.
My little man, Jamie, his name is Jamie Harris. He played D1 against John Wall. He actually played against Dave growing up and in college as
crazy.
Well. He was, when I was around like 14, Jamie might be like 6 or 7 years younger than me,
mm-hmm.
and he was like 8 or 9, and he used to be able to run with us when I was 16.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and score everything. So I'm like, yeah, this kid is 9. Like, I'm not going. Like, this is not gonna happen. So,
I would feel terrible playing as a 9-year-old. By the way,
he was really nice. Like, it was
crazy.
No,
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, you see this person who's yay tall, just being like,
but
just
the crazy thing was, you would just think that he was really short for his age. Like, that's how good he was. He
right.
was 9, but he could score 40. Like, seriously, like, he was 9, but he would play against like other 9-year-olds and score 40-50 points like it's nothing, and play with us and score a good 10 or 12.
Man.
So it's like, imagine how he was making me look crazy.
Right. Yeah.
I made Jamie fall, though. If anybody, I crossed Jamie one time and made him fall. You could ask him.
Just for
he
the
was
record
9
the
years record. Old
yeah. Yeah. Nine.
This is not something to
but
brag
I had
about.
Some handles with it, you know what I mean?
You played like, a part in his career,
like, absolutely. Yeah.
He couldn't add up
part.
All the points, like.
right.
So wait, you were a Bulls fan growing up at that
yeah,
point?
Yeah, I was a Bulls fan.
That's hard
disgusting.
To believe. Yeah,
not really. I mean,
this
like,
is a Knicks town.
This is a Knicks town.
The Nets weren't even close to moving to Brooklyn. This was like,
yeah.
And we're talking
Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, Patrick Ewing, yeah. And like Pat Riley and defense and Anthony Mason. And
but you guys had Horace Grant. So, you know.
Right, and Stacey King, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know what it is? It's like, that all falls into marketing. It's like, what's pushed in the forefront? I'm a young black kid growing up. where Spike Lee movies is about race and everything, and all they keep showing me is Jordan jumping through the air. I want to be like Mike. Well, what team does he play for? I like that team.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like kids now, it's like all they see is Steph Curry. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. They push that, or KD, and they've never been to Oklahoma a day in their life, but right. These kids will, they live and die by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, Golden State Warriors
right,
now.
Right, yeah. Right,
but
right,
at the
right.
time, you know what I mean? Like my son is a big KD fan because of how his play, but he likes OKC now because of KD, even though KD left.
This is a, you know, a globalized economy.
Absolutely. It's crazy.
Not
it's
localized
crazy.
Anymore.
At all, man.
So,
at all.
So when it came to like those Bulls Knicks playoff series, mm-hmm. you didn't have any sympathy for New York. You were
no, you know what's crazy? Yo, like I started to notice this as I got a bit older, right? I always wanted to see the Knicks win,
yeah.
just not against the Bulls or against the Lakers. Because, I mean, what I noticed later on, and, you know, this all is a play on why I named my company, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I was a big Bulls fan, and I started to become a Lakers fan, and I noticed I was a Phil Jackson fan more than anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So because, then.
Right, right, yeah. right. So I just noticed, I'm like, yo, I really like Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Mike, I love Kobe, but I love the tutelage that they're under, where he's the one that's guiding these guys. You know what I mean? That's why I implemented that into music and what I was doing.
And that is why you are a New York Knicks fan now.
I want to see them win. But I'm a Laker fan, man. But I love to see the Knicks win. Like, New York town, any town, winning a championship just brings more momentum to the city.
Yep.
It brings more money. It brings more attention. Who doesn't want that? So, yeah, I want to see the Knicks win. You know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to get past Braun and them, but right. hey, we'll see.
Does your son want to see the Knicks win?
Man, he wants to see Russell Westbrook win. Like, right. Yeah, he wants to see it. He loves Russell Westbrook. Mind you, he worked as a ball boy at Carmelo Anthony's event.
Oh, dope.
And it's cool with Carmelo's son, but he wants to see Russell Westbrook do his thing more than anything.
I'm not co-signing this at all. Right. Sorry right, to like right, dash right. your kid's dreams.
Yeah,
but,
it's
know,
all
whatever.
Good.
yeah, right. So, all right. So going through high school... Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, like, is college next? Do you want to, like, work in a specific industry? Like, what was your mindset as you got close to graduation?
Well, high school was really rough for me because, you know, I'm a creative. You know what I mean? I've always been a creative. I used to draw when I was a kid.
Are you left-handed, by the way?
No, I'm right-handed.
Okay, gotcha.
But like, certain things, I'm ambidextrous. Certain things I could do on my right. Like, I write with my right, but there's certain things I do on my left I can't do on my right. Mm-hmm. So, like...
You can cross over a nine-year-old, like...
With my left, way. No, yeah, seriously, yeah. I cross from my left to my right. Yeah. I can't cross right to left.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
You're like Zoolander.
right, yeah. Can't spin left. Yeah. Nah, that's great. Yo, Zoolander, that's tears. But, like, in high school, it was pretty rough for me. Like, in the 90s in New York, you know, that's when gangs hit New York pretty heavy. You know, I dibbled and dabbled in some of that stuff. Well, I shouldn't have, but I didn't know who I was. And I felt like, you know, for those 5 years, I was telling you about, like, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh, eighth, and ninth, I lived in a different place and went to a different school because I graduated from fifth to sixth. Mm-hmm. Sixth to seventh, I was in the Bronx from sixth. Seventh, I moved to Maryland. Eighth, I moved back to New York. Ninth, I moved to Harlem from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. So it's like I didn't really have any stability. I had friends, but I never really had like a foundation. So I dibbled and dabbled in the wrong things. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I saw Juice when I was really young, and I wanted to be a DJ because of Q and mm-hmm. Juice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I knew that I had some type of liking in music. I always loved music. I used to try to rap when I was a kid.
What was your name?
I never had a rap name. Right, I never had a rap name because I was never confident enough to really put it out there. Like, I just would write stuff and I would tell my friends, yo, I wrote this. And they'd be like, yo, you dope. You should do this. You should do that. And then when we have like little ciphers, I'd be the only person like, nah, I'm not going to say what I wrote. Because I just was scared. I didn't have that confidence instilled in me. So at that time, I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Who? So your mom had to act as... Really, your mom and your dad, right?
Not like, really. You know? My dad was around this whole time. It's okay. Just like my dad is a street dude, and he was doing what he was doing, and he didn't have time to focus on me as a son. I mean, I can't specifically say that. You know, that's more of a question for him. Mm-hmm. But you know, he was doing what he had to do for himself at the time, and mm-hmm. he's a man. He did take care of me. He did help my mom out with certain things. But I didn't have him. Like, I didn't wake up and see my dad every day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, my mom was the person that facilitated everything for me and my sister. And my grandmoms, you know what I mean? Like, she really took care of us. You know what I mean?
So, but with no sort, you're the oldest child.
Yeah, like, from my mom, from my dad, I'm number six out of eight.
Oh, really?
yeah.
So, did you look to your older siblings as to like?
I didn't
where
know
to
them.
Go?
I still to this day, it's a few of them I don't know. You
really?
Know what I mean? Like, yeah, I didn't know a lot of them. You know, my dad had a lot of kids by a lot of different women, so mm-hmm. They just never had relationships. So
right.
me and my dad had a relationship, but I never knew any of my brothers. I know like a few of them,
yeah.
but the younger ones, like my older ones, I just never knew him.
Wow.
Like, I know one of my older siblings, but that's as much as it stops. Like, wow. You know what I mean?
So,
I didn't really know any of them.
So, okay, so after high school, you're in the streets, sort of. Or you're getting out of the streets, I guess?
No, I mean, I never graduated from high school. You know what I mean? Here's the thing. Like, I wasn't... When people have this idea of, like, being in the streets as, like, you're this dude making all these moves, I was a follower. You know what I mean? Like I joined the gang because at the time, I didn't have enough, you know, in me to stand on my own. You know what I mean? I was scared. Like, I moved to Harlem. It was a gang that was really vicious. I was like, I'm going to get down with them because I don't want the shit that they doing to people that happen to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I can say that as a man now, but at that time, like, I just was kind of lost. I didn't know what to do. And what I noticed was, like, once I got into those situations, all the guys that was in the gang, they really liked me for me. They didn't like me because I was some tough guy or nothing like that. They just liked me because I was cool. Mm-hmm. So I had to really, like, sit back and look at that, like, yo, why am I even indulging myself into these type of situations where I don't have to be? I dropped out of school.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped out of school. My mom, like, she just was like, yo, you're either going to work. And she's like, you're either going to, like, work or do something. Like, you can't just live in my home and do absolutely nothing.
Right.
So, you know, she just put me in a position where excuse me for jumping all over the place.
No.
But, you know, my mom was a job developer. So she taught me how to conduct myself on an interview. She taught me how to, you know, speak to people and do things. So I had summer jobs from the time I was 14 on up.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time I was around 17 is when I was able to go get an actual job. You know what I mean? So she set up a job for me to get. And that was the job that I got where I got into the mailroom.
So did you feel like the, I don't know, 8 o'clock to like 2:30 day, mm-hmm. going to classes, like, being around like people your age just wasn't for you. You had gone through as much as you needed to do, and you were like, I'm good?
Nah, you know what it is? Still to this day, I don't know what it was. I think it had a lot to do with the school I was in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, the school, my mom took me out of one bad school, and she thought she was putting me in a better school, but it was actually worse than the school she took me out of.
Damn.
So, I think, you know, kids always do what they're around. Just people in general.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, dudes that play basketball, they usually hang with other ball players. If not, the person that doesn't play ball is probably somebody that's trying to coach or be in that field however. Then you got rappers, you know? They hang with other rappers or they hang with people who do beats. They hang with people that do things that are conducive to what they do.
Right.
For me, I had a few friends, you know, through the gang stuff and just being around, but I had one best friend, and he was like my polar opposite. He wasn't in the gangs. Like, he went to class. Like, we were actually in the same class, and I failed, and he, you know, he excelled. And
you failed so he could excel.
Right. Yeah. Hov did that, so hopefully you wouldn't have to go through that. You know what I mean? It was kind of one of those situations. But, I mean, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was kind of lost, man. Like, I didn't... Those days, I started cutting. Like, I never cut a class in my life till I got to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think high school just gave me too much freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, when I was in the eighth grade, you were on one floor. You know what I mean? You had homeroom with your homeroom teacher, but then they knew you went to this room, that room, that room, the other. In high school, you're basically given a responsibility to do as you please.
Right.
And, I mean, it's nothing wrong with that if a kid is mentally, you know, competent and ready for that. I don't think I was. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, I should have been left back a year so I could learn a bit more about how serious school was, because nothing was serious to me.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think that if you had been left back a year, that would have also just, like, discouraged you from trying? Like, you would have been like, well, now I'm...
It may have, but I'm a big learner off experience. You know what I mean? So it may have, but, you know, I had a lot of times, like, in school where I could have been left back, and then every time my mom told me, like, yo, if you don't step up your grades, you're going to get left back, I would bust my ass and do everything I had to do so I could pass the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's a weird way, but maybe if I would have had, you know, one of those situations early on when I got to high school, I would have been a little bit better prepared. I really don't think that, you know, New York school system, and this is just for me, this is not for everybody else because a lot of people excelled in it, but for how I was living, and we bounced around. It wasn't nothing bad, because every time we moved to a better place until we got into the shelter system.
Right.
And even from that, my mom got through that and got us into a better situation. I think that if I would have had, like, some sense of urgency, then I could have, you know, done what I had to do.
So your mom was like, you got to get a job. You're not just going to sit at home.
My mom was like, yo, you got to do something. You know what I mean? She was just like, you know, you can't just... You have to be something with yourself. I didn't have one of those mothers. I was like, yo, if you don't go to college, then you're not going to be anything. And you're not going to, like, I'm not going to have a son that doesn't go to college. She was just like, yo, listen, find what's going to be best for you.
Mm-hmm.
and do that, and I'm going to help you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So she supported me in that realm.
And by the way, college is not for everybody.
It's,
like,
it's really not. Yeah. I mean, school in its totality, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that school is an amazing tool. I think that if you can go to school and you have the patience to do what you have to do and get your degree and you have a plan, mm-hmm. then you got something. But if you're just going because somebody else wants you to go and you don't, and that's not really what you want to do, you're slipping. Yeah. Like on another level, because you're going to be lost.
Right. You know, like, yeah, I mean, and when I did ask before, like, mm-hmm. if you had any thought as to like what you would do as a ninth grader, like, yeah. my thought as a ninth grader, I might have thought that I was going to be like, you know, a center fielder for the Mets, you right. know, like it wasn't like it was fully formed yet, yeah. but like there was some hope that like down the line something was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then when I went to college, I was so focused on what I was going to do, and you right. know, that's not like right, how right, life right, works.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't know that at the time. Right. You know,
absolutely. One of the things for me was like, what was crazy is that the neighborhood that I moved into was a really bad neighborhood. So I was really young and I was watching a lot of kids that was my age going to prison. I was seeing them die, you know, and I just didn't have any hope. Like, it was one point in time I went to an alternative school, and I had a conversation with a guidance counselor, and she asked me what I think I see myself at 21, and I was 16, and I was like, I don't even think I'm gonna make it to 21. And it wasn't because of all the things I was doing. It just was like the environment that I was in. It was bad, man. Like, it was really bad. Like, I moved to the east side of Harlem, and that shit was no joke. It was really no joke. So I didn't, like I said, I couldn't even see that far. Like, I couldn't see that far because I couldn't see that for other people. It was like nobody where I was from, they were excelling in anything.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It was like everybody from where I was from, they was either in the streets selling crack, or they were going to school, and then they would eventually stop going to school and start selling crack.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was like, damn, like, what am I going to be? You right. know what I mean? I didn't really, I believed that I would only be what I could see at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, no, mean? For sure.
So even like getting a job, by the way, like, seems yeah. like, you know, a huge step forward. Like,
right,
like
right.
You're like, wow, like, I've actually like done this. So what, first of all, did you wear a suit to your interview?
I didn't wear a suit, but I did wear slacks. I wore slacks, a white button-up shirt and a tie and shoes. Mm. I had braids at the time. I made sure my mom braided my hair, you know what I mean, neatly straight to the back. Yeah. You know what I mean? These are all the tools that my mom instilled in me as a job developer, because her job was to wake up in the same community and teach these kids how to conduct themselves.
Yeah.
So she'd be damned if I went on to a job interview and I had Jordans on.
Right, right, you know what I mean? Right.
Especially right. in a New York town.
Yeah.
right, right.
So
right.
did you know the job you would be applying for?
I knew it was for something working at, my mom was like, it's a mailroom position.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I knew it was something like that. I didn't know what the mailroom entailed. You mm-hmm. know, I just knew it was a job, mm-hmm. you know?
And how'd the interview go?
It went good. Yeah. You know what I mean? I conducted, like I said, I knew how to speak. You
right.
know what I mean? I really knew how to speak. I never had a problem with talking. My mom, ever since I was a child, still to this day, if I hold a door for somebody, I'll say, if they say thank you, I'll say you're welcome. If somebody asks me, do I want something, I'll say no, thank you. You know what I mean? It's just, my family's West Indian. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they were strict West Indians too. So they instilled a lot of, you know, mannerism in me and with my grandma, how I'm supposed to speak to people and how I conduct myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that always stayed with me. So I conducted myself pretty good on the interview.
So you get the job.
I get the job.
And you're working at, is this the one at 825 Worldwide
yeah,
Plaza?
Yeah, it's at Worldwide Plaza, man. It kind of blew my mind. You know, my very first day there, I will never forget. It was the 20th floor. My route was the 20th floor, the 23rd, and the 26th. And, like, you know, they put you with a person that tells you how to do the job, introduces, yeah, this is the new guy that's going to be delivering your mail. I'm not going to be on your floor no more. Cool. So I'm walking around, and they're like, yeah, this is the realty department. And I'm like, cool. And then we make this one turn, and I just see all red, right? Yeah. I'm like, what's all this red here for? Like, and it was Murder, Inc. Like, yeah. I see, like, you know, every CD, it has a person's name on it. So I see Irv Gotti and Chris Gotti and BJ.
Oh, for the offices.
For the offices, yeah. Offices. And I'm like, I'm 17. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, what is this? And they're like, this is where the record labels are at. And I'm like, nah. Like, the crazy thing was, I had seen Backstage a few months prior.
Yo.
And when I saw the movie Backstage, I vowed, I was like, yo, I'm getting in music. That's when I knew that I wanted to be in music, when I saw the movie Backstage. Me and my friends, we all went and watched it. And I was amazed. You know what I mean? I was amazed. I was like, yo, I got to get into this some way, somehow. Yeah. And then, like, a few months later, stars just aligned for me. That's how I get my start.
Like, if honestly, maybe if you hadn't dropped out of school mm-hmm. and your mother hadn't been like, get a job, and yeah. you hadn't gone to this specific one,
yeah.
and hadn't gotten that job, right. you wouldn't have ended up on that floor.
No, that would have never happened. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a firm believer in destiny. Like, and I say it now, like, I feel like I got lucky, you know what I mean, in a lot of senses, because what's the odds of a kid that can't figure his life out? A lot of my friends are doing wrong and getting prison sentences, and at this time, I'm like, yo, like, I don't really want to go crazy in the streets because I don't want to go to prison. I know how much it's going to hurt my mother, and I don't want to die, and I'm like, yo, I need something, and I see this movie, and I'm just like, wow, I'm going to find a way, and then, like, about 5 to 6 months later, I get a job delivering mail to these same people I was just watching on the big screen.
Yeah. But the other half of luck, obviously, is putting in that work.
Right, absolutely.
And you had to, like, shine above, like, anybody else that would be your competition or find a way in.
Right, I had to find a way in.
So how'd you do that?
I mean, what helped me out was, like, I was the youngest guy in the mirror room. Like, everybody I was around, they were, like, in their 20s, and I was, you know, like, 17. So, you know, people who are in the music industry, they're just a little bit... These guys are in their 20s, and they're millionaires running the offices, so they might be a little bit more receptive to a kid as opposed to a guy that's their same age trying to come to them, which not necessarily is very accurate, but this is just from my own experiences. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of hard to get an internship, you know what I mean, when you reach a certain age. I wouldn't say it's hard, but it's like people have the wrong idea about shit, and a guy who's making millions is gonna look at you like that's from the streets, like, man, you 27 trying to get a job in here, like, what you doing, like, you know what I mean,
right,
like, because you're not gonna just get a job, you're gonna start at the lowest part of the totem pole, and you got to work your way up, and a lot of people are not gonna be willing to do the shit that a 17-year-old is gonna do,
right.
You know what I mean? For me, I just was like, yo, I'll do anything, you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to be accessible as possible, be transparent as possible, listen and learn as much, and do whatever was required of me. You know what I mean? So that was the biggest thing for me.
How did you, like, transition from being in the mailroom to actually
getting in the office?
Yeah.
I got fired. I got fired, man.
Easy answer.
Yeah, I got fired. I mean, what happened was I would help people after work. Like, people need help with shipping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At this time, we don't have MP3s and, you know, online shipping is not a big thing. I mean, online shopping is not a big thing. So people aren't buying, you know, their music off of iTunes or anything. They're buying CDs. They're buying shirts from actual fan clubs. They're submitting letters and stuff to get to artists. So I would just ask, like, yo, Omiyele McIntosh, she ran Jay-Z's fan club, FanFam. Her and Dara McIntosh, and you know, they liked me because I was the cool kid, always delivering their mail on time, always, you know, laughing and joking with them. So I was just like, yo, when I get off of work, can I come up and can I help? So I would do that, you know, maybe 2 days a week, 3 days a week, whatever they needed. Like, I would just stay. And then once I got fired, you know, it's kind of funny the transition in between there. I had got a job at a sneaker store around my block. And it was one point in time, this guy that I was working for, his name was Frank, he asked me to clean some windows, right? I had never done this. He asked me to clean some windows, and this was my breaking point for going to ask for an internship. I had got down, right, to clean the windows, and you know, like, they have, like, these mirrors where you could see, like, the sneakers you put on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yo, I had the Windex in my hand. It was some real movie shit. Like, I had the Windex in my hand. I had paper towel. And I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, nah, man. I was like, nah, this is not going to be me. You know what I mean? So I called Shari Bryant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Shari Bryant. I called, and I was like, yo, you know, can I come in? Whatever y'all need from me, I'll just come intern. Like, whatever you need me to do.
How did you know Shari?
I delivered mail to Shari as well. You know what I mean? Shari is from Harlem.
She was at Def Jam.
Yeah, she was at, well, she wasn't at Def Jam at the time. She was at Rockefeller.
Right.
You know what I mean? So she was Carlene Balin.
Yeah.
Carlene, you know, said I could buy 2 tickets. You know what I mean? Yeah. Carlene Balin at the time, she was J. Damon Biggs' assistant, and Shari was Carlene's assistant. Shari was going to school simultaneously as working at Rockefeller. So she was juggling a lot too. And I think Shari might be a year or two younger than me.
Right.
I'm sorry, Shari, to push your age. Yeah. I don't know all that. But, you know, Shari was working there, and, you know, she's from Harlem. We had a good rapport because the same thing applied for her. Whatever they needed from mail, I helped them. You know what I mean? So they just knew that they could. That was one thing I learned by having regular jobs. You know what I mean? Having a rapport with the people and just being available. You know what I mean? Like, when you, whatever type of job you got to do is customer service to some sort of extent, because you're dealing with some sort of exchange with somebody. So I just made sure that I was accessible at all times. So I hit Shari like, yo, could I come to the office? She like, yeah. You know what I mean? Let's figure it out.
And she was like, where's my mail?
Right, right. Now, at the time, you know what's crazy? The mail room, like, the first 2 months of me interning, the mail room was better than that. Like, interning was tough, man. Like, it was really tough because nobody's taking you serious. Not saying that Shari didn't, but it's like, I came in there because I wanted to work in, I didn't know what A&R was or anything. I wanted to work in music in some sort of capacity. And all I'm being told is, yo, Beanie Sigel just ordered some oxtails. Go downstairs and get them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, yo, Young Chris and Neef, they want the new Jordans. We're going to give you the money. Go to Foot Locker and get them. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing anything.
That's all you're doing? That right. is a big responsibility. That's right. I'm sure that Beanie Sigel is not happy when his oxtails don't show up.
I know, but I'm like, damn, man. If I wanted to deliver food, I'd have became a waiter. You know right. what I mean? Like, that's just the standpoint I'm looking at it from.
But you kept at it.
I kept at it, man, because yeah. it was like, you know, I just looked at it like this, right? Like I said, man, like, I'm not glorifying it by no means, but I come from a rough place. And I just knew what the alternative was. You know what I mean? I knew that, you know, if I wasn't in a position to go deliver some mail, I could be delivering something else. Mm-hmm. And that could put me in a whole world of trouble.
Right.
So I just was like, yo, I'll do whatever. Like, my mom was happy. You know what I mean? My mom was, I wasn't even making no money at the time.
Right.
I was kind of, the funny thing was, I was getting unemployment, right?
Yeah.
So I'm getting unemployment. And so that's what kind of held me over, because I was getting unemployment and I wasn't on any type of payroll situation from Rockefeller. So I'm surviving off my unemployment at the time.
Shouts to that job that fired you.
Right, absolutely. Shouts to them that fired me, because unemployment held me down for a bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, the unemployment was holding me down. I had some money in my pocket.
So now are you doing like a real, like, you're going into the office at 10 o'clock?
Yeah, I'm going into the office at 10 o'clock. I'm doing what's told to me, but I'm not really getting any results at this point.
For you.
For me, for what I want to do.
For Beanie Sigel, you are. Like,
Not even, because he ain't like me, man. Like
that, really?
Yeah, but the world is crazy, man. Life is crazy, because that's one of my closest friends. You know what I mean? That's my brother. And when I first met him, he wasn't too fond of me. You know what I mean? Because I was nosy. I wanted to know what was going on. I was eager. I was like, yo, like, what y'all doing today? Like, can I come through? Like, y'all shooting a video? Y'all need me to come through? What y'all need me to do? Y'all need me to get food for the video? Right, like, I just wanted to do whatever they wanted.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I was, like, trying to find my ways in.
Of course.
You know?
So what are you doing from 10 o'clock to whenever you left work?
Honestly, I'm sitting in Shari's cubicle. I'm sitting in Shari's cubicle, and I'm making copies of stuff, taking stuff taking into office envelopes from Rockefeller down to Def Jam, like mm-hmm. nothing, like I'm just
you had a car
doing nothing, so I didn't have a car at that time.
But you're showing your face.
I'm showing my face,
which is also
I'm showing
very,
my face every day.
Important.
I mean, one day I had found a paper with like contact numbers on it.
Yep.
And I was just a fan of the Philly guys. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of gravitated towards them. And I just felt like they needed more help. So I seen Bean's mother's name on a piece of paper, and I just called her. I called her one day. I just picked it up. I called. I said, hey, how you doing, Miss Michelle? This is Wayno. You know, I work in the office. I just wanted to know, you know, if you guys need help with the, you know, with the Young Guns, anybody, because I just feel like I could help them out some sort of way. And she vented it. Like, she was like, I'm happy somebody called. You know what I mean? She's like, yeah, because Rockefeller, they could be doing more and da 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 da. And I was like, wow. So she was like, this was my way in. This was one of my ways in. She was like, you know what? Go to the studio. She's like, it's okay. I tell them that you. I said you could go.
Yeah.
So I went to the studio, and then I started coming to the studio. And
this
then people.
Is Baseline?
This is Baseline. Yeah. So people were looking at me like, how the fuck did this intern get in studio? You know what I mean? And I'm like, hey, man, I'm just chilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I got kicked out a few times. You know what I mean? Like, I got kicked out. They just was like, yo, what is he doing here? It got back to Shari. Shari came to me one day. Like, I love Shari. Yeah. She came to me one day, and she was like, Wayne, you can't go to the studio because Jay and Dame is complaining now. She's like, yo, they want to know, why is my intern in the studio and you're not doing anything? You're just sitting around. And I was like, all right. And I didn't listen, and I went back.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
So Shari is a wonderful person who
is
short in stature, right? Like, she's a short woman, but like, if she don't play.
Think about that. I was older than Shari, and she still stepped in me.
Yo,
stop it. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to keep doing this, because now it's kind of getting her in trouble.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? It's kind of getting her in trouble, and I understood that. But I mean, what happened that was really good in that sense was I started to build a relationship with the Young Guns. Mm-hmm. We were all the same age, you know what I mean? So I started to build a relationship with them, And they started asking me to come to the studio. You know what I mean? So that's what kind of helped me with them.
And they were asking you to come to the studio for what? Because, like, but
I'm just doing whatever they need now. It's like, it's going from me doing whatever Shari needs to now they like, all right, you go do this for us. Like, it's like I became, like, kind of like their assistant in a sense. You know what I mean? So I'm just doing whatever they need as far as, like, yo, can you find me some beats? You know what I mean? Like, can you find me some beats? And that's when I started talking to people in the A&R offices. Like, I would go in the hip hop, you know, Kayambo, his office, and it would just be CDs sitting there, Kanye West, like, just beats, Just Blaze. And these are beats that nobody's using.
Right.
So I would just take the beats and bring them back to the studio. Like, yo, I found this, I found this, I found that. Or I would just find, like, just random producers. Like, everybody would mail their CDs. Like, you know, of course, now, if you have a person of stature's email, you just bombard them with emails.
Yeah.
At that time, they were just sending in mail. So I would just go through the mail and just put the CD in, listen to beats. If I found somebody dope, I'd take them and take it to the studio. So that's A&R work, and I had no idea. You know what I mean?
So State Property comes into Rockefeller, and they get branded as a unit.
Right.
And the Young Guns are probably low on the totem pole, right?
Very, yeah.
So what is their recording schedule like? What is their opportunity like?
They have no schedule. It's like they were allowed to use the, like, if they're in Baseline, they're allowed to use the studio. Like, if somebody allowed, like, let's say Jay's in the studio, right? Mm-hmm. And Jay may record or he may not record. He might be sitting there and be like, yo, y'all go ahead and do something. You know what I mean? Or if just, like, Jay would be in the A room working, Just Blaze is in the B room working.
Yeah.
Like, they would might go over by Just Blaze and be like, yo, what you doing? And he'll play them something and be like, yo, you know, if we got some time, get on it. You know, but they had no schedule. There was nothing there for them because, I mean, the Young Guns, they grew from nothing to something. But at this time, they had no record. You know what I mean? They had no record. There was no plan to put them out. Freeway at this time, Freeway's taking off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
At this time, Freeway's taking off. He's the guy. So it's like the Young Guns are just sitting back watching that.
Right.
You know?
So 1-900-Hustler.
1-900-Hustler. I mean, that was a little bit earlier, but
Free At Last.
No, this is way before Free At Last. This is Philadelphia Freeway. This
I'm sorry. Yeah,
this is when Freeway is working on his debut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm in a studio with them. I'm in a studio when Free does What We Do before Jay and Beans gets on it. You know what I mean? Like, we're just around, like we're just around everything. Like, we had this camera. Yo, nobody knows where this camera's at. Somebody stole it out of Baseline. But it was this camera with footage of everything they had ever done. Like, I mean, from the moment that Freeway recorded What We Do to when Just was making the beat, everything.
Oh, my
yo,
God.
Yo, if you have that camera,
holla at us, man. You get a lot of paper off of that camera.
We will
yo,
pay top playing. Dollar.
Top dollar. And we'll give you a discount at Sweet Chick.
So, yeah. So you're hanging out with the Young Guns.
Yeah.
You're at Baseline all the time.
All the time. Now I'm in there all the time.
What's your relationship with Just Blaze?
Just Blaze, I mean, at this time, I didn't really have a relationship with him because he was just... Just would tell you he's just like just the weird guy in the corner, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's just doing beats, you know what I mean? Like, Just is just doing beats all the time. Kanye's stopping in from time to time, but at this time Kanye's trying to get people to listen to him rap.
Right.
What did you think of Kanye's early raps?
I thought he was dope. Yo, the first time I ever met Kanye, right, it was around a little bit after the Blueprint came out, and they had this spread of him in the Source magazine with, like, him, like, he's standing like this, he has, like,
all his credits.
So I see him walking through the office one day, so I'm like, yo, you Kanye, right? Like, I was like, you do the beats? He was like, yeah. He's like, oh, I rap too. Yo, he rapped for me for like 8 minutes. And I was like, well, I don't know what he thinks I can do, but I thought he was dope. Like, I really thought he was dope.
Did you clap?
No, I didn't clap. I just was sitting there like, wow. Like, I was kind of thrown off that Kanye would rap for me, but at the time he was just so eager to let anybody hear him rap.
Because
we were on the 29th floor and Def Jam had the 28th and the 27th. So you would go to the 28th floor to just go down to I might be going to bring something to Leo's office, like a piece of mail or something.
Yeah.
And Kanye's on the 28th floor doing the same thing in somebody's office. Then you go to 27th floor and he's by Plain Pat's cubicle, rapping for Plain Pat. You know what I mean? Or rapping for whoever Plain Pat had by his cubicle. So, like, he was just really eager. You know what I mean?
But it's the same as what you were doing, just in a
different way.
Any, like, opportunity you can
anything,
get,
yo.
You gotta do it.
And I mean, and at this time, like, yo, Kanye had like 70% of College Dropout done.
Yeah.
Like, he had All Falls Down. He had, like, did he have Jesus Walks? I don't think he had Jesus Walks at the time, but he had a lot of those records. And I mean, we would hear him, me and my man Ramsey and Travis, like, he would come in the office with us and play us these records. This before he even signs the Rockefeller. And we're like, yo, like, what is anybody doing? Yeah. But we didn't have, we were kids. Like, none of us had the power to sign him.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he ended up getting signed. You know what I mean?
Did you end up playing any Kanye beats for Young Guns?
Yeah. Yo, let me tell you the funny thing about that. At this time, I'm still trying to do some sort of management, right? Mm-hmm. So I got this little dude from my hood that he's a battle rapper, but he can rap.
Yeah.
So I'm taking beats from the office, Kanye beats, and giving them to him. Like, for real, yo. Like, I gave, what was that record? Yo, Dipset Forever, right? Yeah. Dipset Forever. Before Cameron had that, this dude that I was managing, his name was Great One, right? It was crazy. I seen him today before I came over here. Whoa. Just randomly seen him. He had a whole song to that beat. Like, cause my whole thing was like, yo, I'ma get a Rockefeller, but watch, I'ma get me an artist and I'ma get him signed somewhere. You know what I mean? So I was always thinking, I didn't understand till now how ahead I was thinking, but I was really thinking ahead at that time.
When you were rating hip hop's beats,
CDs,
the CDs that were in his office, did he know that you were doing that, or were you just like very like covertly?
No, he didn't know because he was never there. Like, hip hop is like a myth, yo. It's like he's like a genie, yo. Like
he's a unicorn.
Yo, he's really a unicorn. Like, it's like when you see him, you can't believe it when you see him. You know what I mean? And ironically, one of hip hop's closest friends is one of my close friends. He's from Harlem as well. Mm-hmm. So hip hop at this time, his son is a baby.
Yeah.
Like, his son is little, like running, because his mom worked at Def Jam.
Right. Correct.
Erica. You know what I mean? So I used to see his son all the time. Like, me and hip is good, but we'd never seen hip hop. So I just had free range to go in his office and do whatever I wanted because he was never there. I actually cleaned up his office because it was just stuff all over the place. And I was like, yo, one day I was like, I'm gonna just clean this shit up. You know what I mean? Because nobody was just taking.
Yo, he's got to thank you.
Oh man, nah, I gotta thank him, man. That guy's taught me so much. I can't, man.
What were your interactions with Dame when he wasn't like angry that you were showing up at?
Oh man, yo, Dame. I tell people all the time, like, Dame, that was with Currency, that whole DD172 thing. That's nice, Dame.
Yeah.
Like, that's nice. Like, that, he's good. That's good, Dame. I had Bizarro Dame. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Dame was he was crazy, but I think, you know, everybody that's great got to be a little bit crazy.
Like Kanye said. Yeah,
absolutely, yo. Yeah, for real.
Genius that ain't crazy. Yeah.
Right, man. Like, even me, I think I got a little bit of crazy ways with me, but it may not be to that degree. But Dame was just really passionate, man. Mm-hmm. Like, Dame will tell you in a minute, like, I'm not a music guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he would put so many different things in play. Like, he put together, like, a coffee table book of, like, photo shoots. And I didn't get it. But now when you look up, it's like, that's all people do coffee table books on. Right.
I mean, so he had magazines.
He had magazines.
America Magazine.
Yeah, yo, he was really innovative. And I think, you know, one of the good things is that he had Jay as a leverage piece. So it's like all the things that Jay might not be into, he would just take that and be like, man, I'm doing this. And I'm going to do it to the level I want to do it on.
Right, so when Jay wasn't fucking with pro kids, Dame got all the pro kids.
Right, absolutely. I mean, rightfully so. It was like, that's one thing I learned at Rockefeller. It was like, we never had to go outside for anything. That's why when you look at a lot of the artists that no longer on Rockefeller, you know, because it basically doesn't exist anymore, they kind of fell into disarray because they had so much given to them. You know what I mean? I don't even think they understand.
Right.
You never understand what you got till it's gone.
Right.
So they didn't understand, like, the magnitude of the opportunities that they're getting. It's like, yo, dog, like, Beanie Siegel had a cartoon. Do you know who was doing this cartoon? This brother named Carl Jones, who was the executive producer on the Boondocks and created Black Dynamite.
Yeah.
So when you think, like, damn, it's like that cartoon never materialized, look who was working on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't really think they understood what they were doing, and that's why they kind of fell, you know, it kind of fell away. It did.
So if Beanie's mother is not exactly thrilled with how Rockefeller was handling him, how do the Young Guns and their families feel about where
they are? Oh, the Young Guns, man, listen. Chris and Neef, I love y'all, man. Like, but for them, it was a really frustrating time. You know, it was frustrating for me trying to figure out who I'm going to be as an A&R. It was frustrating for them because they were getting, like, their friends was getting into some real serious problems. Like, they had this one friend, you know, Chris always raps about, named L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, L.A. had got murdered. And when L.A. got murdered, they had, like, Jay and them had them come up to New York and just stay in New York. Like, he had them living in New York because he didn't want to see. That was their closest guy. Like, L.A. was a dude that he was around Jay. He was around Dame and Beans and Kanye and all these people. He's a street dude. Unfortunately, you know what I mean, something happened to him and he passed. But they didn't want that for them. So Jay really took Neef. Neef was really a loner. You know what I mean? Like, Neef was a really a loner, and Jay was, you know, the more accessible one. I mean, Chris was the more accessible one. So Jay took, like, Chris really under the wing. That's how they made the record Nigga Please on the Blueprint 2 and Never Take Me Alive. Never Take Me Alive on the Young Guns album. It was actually for Blueprint 2. It was just Chris and Jay on it. And but the reason why they're rapping about the things that they're rapping, like Jay is rapping about losing Big and Chris is rapping about losing L.A. It's because that happened all at that time. So he had him up there. And then, you know, Jay never used the record. So when we did the Young Guns album, we needed a verse from Jay. Jay was like, y'all can have Never Take Me Alive. And then we just put Neef on it.
Yeah. Great song. Yeah. So how does Can't Stop, Won't Stop come to be?
Oh, man. Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Six-Figure Digger. Six-Figure Digger that did a lot of Cameron stuff, a lot of stuff on SDE, a lot of Cameron's early on stuff. Gino Sims was managing him. Gino Sims is ASAP Ferg's manager.
Right.
I met Gino on an A&R conference when I was like 19, really young, going in DC, and me, Gino kind of like put me under wing. And I had a really good relationship with Gino because he was mentoring me and he was already in the game. So he was managing Six-Figure Digger and EZLP. So they were always giving us beats. And me and Ramsey, we were just going through beats one day in the office. Ramsey Francois, he was like, he's the guy, if you look on every Rockefeller album, he was handling like all the administrative work. He had a crazy load of work, you know what I mean? But me and Ramsey were going through beats in the office one day, and we found Can't Stop, Won't Stop, and a few others. And we took it to the studio, and they did that record playing around like the I can't remember who gave them the Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Somebody gave that to them like, yo, you should say this.
Yeah.
And they just did it in their own words. But excuse me, we gave them that record. And the way that the record started rolling, me and the Young Guns, we just had a weekend to do nothing. And we had Quad Studios at this time. So at this time, like, they're kind of, because now Kanye signed, you know, he's kind of building. Because he's doing mixtapes and stuff.
Yep.
You know, the Diplomats, they're in Baseline. Then some days they're not. Jay is working. You know what I mean? I think at the time, Jay might have been... He's always working. Like, even when he says he's not working, he's always working.
Right.
But he's, like, dibbling and dabbling. So we had to kind of facilitate another room for ourselves, which was Quad. So we did a mixtape, which was The Youngest in Charge. You know, I came up with the name for The Youngest in Charge. I picked a lot of the beats. And we put Can't Stop, Won't Stop on it. They linked me with DJ Enough. And me and DJ Enough came up, like, we sat down, we did the artwork together. I'm 19 years old. We did the artwork together. Like, he decided, he was like, yo, this Can't Stop, Won't Stop record is something. He's like, I'm about to start playing this every day. Like, nobody gave him a dime for that. He just really liked the record. And DJ Enough went on and just went full-fledged with the record. And then everybody else started picking it up. A couple weeks later, it's getting like 3,000 spins per week. Like, Can't Stop, Won't Stop is one of the biggest records in Rockefeller history.
So crazy.
And it's not like the biggest records in Rockefeller history is not even Jay-Z record. You know what I mean? It's Old Boy by Cameron, Rock the Mic, and Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Those are some of the biggest records. So it catches on fire. It catches on fire. We had a budget to do the State Property Chain Gang album. We did that. We put it on there. The State Property albums were like basically a tool to break the State Property artists, and then from that they would get a situation for them to come out. So that's why if you look at the first State Property album, Freeway's all over it. Then you look at the next one, it's the Young Guns all over it, and their albums come out right after.
Brilliant.
You know, the third one, it was supposed to be Oskino and Sparks, but Oskino couldn't stay out of trouble.
Right.
I mean, but they ended up getting nominated for a Grammy on it.
Yeah. So can you talk about what that 3,000 spins means to artists like that, like in terms of like booking?
Listen, when here's the thing, I always say this, right? Like, you look at a guy like Chance the Rapper, right? Everybody, a lot of people know who Chance the Rapper is, but he doesn't get radio play. Like, he doesn't get radio play like
he's starting to
now.
Yeah,
but he doesn't get radio play like a Fetty Wap would. And he has a, if you ask me, I think he has a bigger fan base, like a broader fan base that's gonna spin than a Fetty Wap. Not to take anything away from Fetty Wap, but if he had a radio on record all the time, it would just help. You know what I mean? Like, I watched this interview one time, and Rich Homie Quan was like, yo, when I was growing up, we ain't have nothing, but we had a radio. You know what I mean? And it's a lot of people that still to this day, they might not, they can't afford an iPhone, and they don't know anything about iTunes or Google Play or Spotify, but they listen to terrestrial radio. And that's how they engage with their artists. That's how they learn. You know, so when back to your point with the Young Guns, at that time, that really opened up the door for them, because this was a time when nobody knew who they were. They were in a movie, and now this record comes and everybody knows who they are. So they're getting booked for shows. We were on the Rock the Mic tour performing it. We were somewhere and seeing Lil Wayne like at a show, and he knew Can't Stop Won't Stop word for word, and the Young Guns had never met him. I mean, this was before he was Wayne,
yeah, right,
but
right.
You know, we still looked at him like, yo, that's Lil Wayne, like, you know what I mean? And it's just insane. So like a record being on radio helps out tremendously.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. You be like, I don't care about the radio. Yeah, you should. To an extent, you should.
What was the video for that? For that record,
we did it in like a school. Okay. It was like
right.
A school. Like yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the crazy thing about the Young Guns was that wasn't them. You know right. what I mean? Like they're street guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're street guys, and Can't Stop, Won't Stop, it popped off. But that wasn't who they were as artists.
But then to like you know appeal to like the 106 and Park crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You have to have them.
What was the next single where they shot it up in the
Aspens and all that? No, oh, No Better Love. That came like a year later. But that was for their debut album.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? No Better Love. Yeah, we flipped like the Luther Vandross sample.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was done by my man Chad West. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like. He did a lot of the Philly artist stuff.
Right.
But yeah, like, see, at that time, you had things like 106 and Park, where you could break an artist there.
Right.
You know what I mean? You could take an artist there and put them in a countdown amongst all these other artists. And even if they never reach number one, they're still in a conversation.
Sure.
Was 106 and Park rigged?
I don't know, yo. Like, you know what's crazy? I always thought it was man.
It was.
I thought it was to some sort of extent, but
also
I don't
not
know.
Located on 106 and Park.
Like, it actually was on
originally.
106 and Park.
Originally it was.
Originally it was, but I'm going to keep it 100. Like, I'm from that neighborhood. Like, I was like, yo, they got one. Like, it's really on 106 and Park. Like, that's not no sweet place. You
right.
know what I mean?
No,
so it's like,
right.
You can't just have artists. And at that time, like, New York is a place where artists is getting robbed. Like, you can't just come to New York. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people is getting robbed. Things is happening to them. So it was kind of dangerous to put a place there where
right.
it's a hub where dudes could just sit there like, oh yeah, we gonna wait.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wait on all the kids who are coming just to stand online.
Right.
Yeah, steal lunch money.
Wait,
right.
So back to Baseline, and while you're with the gun with Young Guns,
mm-hmm.
what is your relationship with the Harlem contingent, like the Diplomats? Because
yeah.
you are from Harlem.
Right.
Was there any sort of like crossover where you're like, yo, I
yeah,
live
yo,
here.
Yo, let me
like,
tell you. Yo, you know what's so crazy about that? A lot of people don't know this. I actually worked for the Diplomats for a really small amount of time. I went to, me and Jewels went to the same junior high school.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, but well, it was kind of separated. It's actually not too far from where you guys are. You know what I mean? But
we want to go right now.
Yeah, we could go. You know what I mean?
I
came from here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's right here.
Maybe like 5 years ago. By the way, I saw Jewels just like driving
for
around.
Real?
Yeah,
yeah.
Like,
well, I didn't know Jewels. Like I didn't know him in junior high school. But see, I'm from the East Side. Jewels is from uptown.
Mm-hmm.
Cam is from uptown. I didn't really know Jim. I didn't know
Jim's
them.
From the East Side.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
He's from the East, but yeah, from the West. Like, he's on the borderline. I think he's from Forster and Taft, like around that area, and that's the borderline. Like,
mm-hmm.
Fifth Avenue, it separates the two.
Right.
So, crazy thing about that is a lot of people don't know this. When I first started working for Rockefeller and they put me on payroll, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting $200 a week, right?
Yep.
$200 a week. I'm getting that plus my unemployment because I'm on a stipend,
no,
right?
Listen.
So,
I was going to do an air horn noise, but.
Right. Pull up. Yo, I got 400. But so one day, Cameron, yo, it's crazy. Like, Cam and Jim, it looked like they had been arguing or something. So they walking into Rockefeller.
Probably were.
Right. So I'm standing there. So Cameron walks up to me. He's like, yo, shorty, yo, you work here? I was like, yeah. He's like, how much they pay you a week? I was like, $200 a week. He's like, come work for Diplomats. I'll give you
$400. Wow.
So I was like, word? He like, yeah, take my number, right? So he gives me his number. At this time, I mean, I'm still kind of early on with the Young Guns. I'm figuring out the Rockefeller system, everything. So Cameron's like, yo, take my number. So he takes my number. I mean, I take his number, whatever. I come back to the hood. I'm like, yo, Cam, like, come home with me is out.
Yeah.
So I'm wild. I'm like, yo, Cam gave me his number. I'm like, yo, look, I'm about to call him. So I call him. I was like, he answers the phone. I'm like, yo, Cam, this the guy who gave me your number. I was like, are you serious about hiring me? He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm going to have somebody call you. I'm like, cool. He never calls me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is this comes back around to my mom, right? So I knew a lot of older dudes in the hood in Harlem. So it's this older dude I used to be with, big money guy, you know what I mean? Him and this other guy that Cam knew.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that Cam knew, when he came home from prison, my mom helped him get a job. So he, like, loved me. You know what I mean? Like on a little brother time. Yeah. Like, yo, Wayne, this is before I didn't even know he knew Cam. So he's just asking me like, what's going on with you? I tell him, I'm like, yo, Cam said he'd give me a job. He calls Cam, like, I hadn't spoke to Cam in a while. So he calls Cam like, yo, you told this kid named Wayne you was going to give him a job. Cam like, yeah, I remember Shorty. He's like, yo, he like, look out for him. His mom looked out for me when I came home. So he like, all right, I got him, right? Man. Still, I didn't hear from Cam for a minute. Yeah. But one day, when I was getting on a plane to go to D.C. at that A&R conference I was telling you I met Gino at, somebody calls me like, yo, this is such and such. I work for Cameron. He wants you to come to this address on Monday. You're going to start working for Diplomats.
Whoa.
Right? Which it ended up being in his crib. He had it like, it was all Cam had me doing. Let me tell you what Cam had me doing. All he had me doing was burning Diplomat, the mixtape, the joint with him and Jim on the front of it, like this, like the paid in full scene.
Yeah,
he had me burning those CDs all day.
Oh my, yo,
yeah, you know what I mean. So I kind of grew frustrated with that. And I ended up, but at the time,
that's Duke the God's job.
Like, yeah, I mean Duke, they was doing all types of stuff. Yeah. But what I say is Cameron is a real stand up dude because I got tired of doing it. Right, I stopped going. Yeah. Right. And at this time, Cam had got locked up, you know what I mean, for the situation he had, like, really early on. And I hadn't seen him in a while. So one day, I see him in the Rockefeller office, and I'm like, yo, Cam, man, like, I never got paid. He was like, you never got paid? I was like, nah. He was like, how much you earned? I was like, I worked for 2 weeks. You told me $400 a week.
Yeah.
He went in his pocket and pilled off $800 and gave it to me.
That's awesome.
Like that. So Cam is a stand-up dude for that, for sure.
Cam,
man,
is the greatest.
He's a stand-up dude Cam for that. Is, you know, man?
So okay. So Young Guns, when do you find out that... Or first of all, how easy was it for Dame and everyone in charge there to be like, okay, cool, you're the point person now, and we're going to defer to you for their whole career?
Well, I can't take all credit for that. It was a guy named Big Face Gary.
Yep.
Big Face Gary.
Like, Eric loves Big Face Gary.
Well, I love the idea of him. We never met him, but every time we talk to like hip hop or Lenny or whatever.
Yo, Big Face Gary, dog. Big Face Gary was one of Dame's friends. He came home, and Dame gave him a job, and he threw him into doing A&R. So, Big Face Gary, he kind of took me under his hip hop's old office ended up becoming Big Face Gary's office, and he took me under wing. He was the one that started putting. He told Shari, "Yo, I'm taking him." Like once he started seeing me at the office and all that, I mean, in the studio, he needed somebody that. Because he didn't want to deal with them, like, you know what I mean, with the Young Guns and all that. So he would put me like, "Yo, you stay with them." So Big Face Gary, he was one of the people that he gave me a big shot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like him, Lenny S, of course, like Lenny, G. Robinson, you know what I mean? Al Branch, Hip Hop, all of these dudes who like are big guys in the game. I was under their tutelage for years, just learning from them.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of things that I learned. I didn't even know what the hell I was learning. I just was subconsciously, it was in me. Though.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I started to use these tools later on. But they taught me everything, man. But Big Face Gary, he was one of the guys.
So Big Face Gary for us is just like, I always relate it to like random mixtape tracks that were like, so we just traveled back from D.C. this weekend, right? And like, so we put, you know, all of our hip hop songs on random. And like, you'll get like a random mixtape track that's Sunny. Remember Sunny from Hot 97?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sunny. Hell
and,
yeah.
And she's now like a chef on the Food Network.
Yeah, she was chefing then too.
Yeah. But she was like, she would
I
just like
what song it was,
she was doing
she was
like street sweeper
stuff.
Where
did I get this shit?
Yeah, she's like, shout out to Big Face Gary. Right. And it was like Big Face Gary. Like,
yeah.
So it still comes up like to this day. We were just talking about it yesterday.
Yeah.
But okay.
Big Face Gary, that's my guy.
So you were around obviously Young Guns. I want to know what it was like to be around the Young Guns and for Jay-Z to start using Young Chris's flow, and like whether that was like a big deal within the camp or even to you.
Honestly, this is how it went, right? Like, the whole thing, it's like this, right? Like I said, you're going to do whatever is around. I wouldn't say Jay took his flow. Chris was the first guy that Jay, like, co-signed, other than Bleak. I mean, he co-signed Beans and all that, but he's only 16. Like, he was really, really, really excited about Young Chris. So, like I said, like, you know, he took him under the wing. with the Philly dudes, like when you hang out with them, you'll start saying their word, like you'll just start singing their slang because it's new, it sounds fun. It's like when they say it, it's like, yo, this is cool. So he would just, when he see them, he just address them a certain way,
right?
Mm-hmm. No different than you start hanging with Haitians and you be like, stop, I say, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so
I call everybody just, my Zoes,
exactly. Like, well, we see Zoe Dallas, we be like, what's good, Zoe? Like, you know what I mean? But he would just like start implementing like their slang,
right,
into it. And one thing about Chris is that Chris was just really, he's still dope till this day. Chris don't even know how dope he is, you know what I mean? He's still really dope. And I think Jay just seen something in him. A lot of people always look at it like this, like, oh, he took Chris's flow and Chris never got anything. Listen, Chris from Rockefeller Records was able to buy his mother a house. He was able to do things for his daughter and his family that if he would have been like the same circumstances of where I'm from, if he would have just stayed there, he might have not even have made it that far. So it was an even exchange, but I don't think Jay took it. Jay just took elements of it and used it, and Chris took shit from him. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Criminal Background, right?
I mean, you also took stuff from Hip Hop's Office. So, you know,
absolutely. We're all taking stuff. It's Rock La Familia. If you can't take stuff from each other, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's Rock, you know, La Familia, not Rob La Familia.
If you listen to Chris on Criminal Background, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he alluded to that. Like, it's a lot of songs where they talk about each other. All of them. He's talking about, Jay talks about people. That's an all-fair conversation. Yeah. But like, it's a lot of different things, you know, where he alludes to that. But he said, I don't take it personal. Reverse it when they share with you. That's what Chris said about the Jay-Z situation. He said that on the Chain Gang album.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing. He may have took little things, but he did the same thing with Jay. You know what I mean? It's a lot of stuff he took from him too.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So when Rockefeller looks like it's like, you know, humming real, like on every engine is humming.
Mm-hmm.
And then things start to sort of
not be humming.
Yeah.
Right.
So when the split happens, are you still there and how does that affect you personally? Yeah.
Yo, what's crazy is, I mean, I got fired from Rockefeller.
Okay.
Right? I ended up getting fired from Rockefeller for some BS.
You went to the studio too much.
I wish it was that simple.
Yeah.
But even when I got fired, they brought me back. When they brought me back, I became Bean's personal assistant / point person. So everything Beanie Siegel had to go through me.
Okay.
Right? I didn't know what was happening because it was in divisions. It was like, okay, I would see Jim and them. Like, when I be in the hood of Harlem, I see Jim and them. You know, Rockefeller was never really a thing for them anyway. You know what I mean? So they didn't care. They was the diplomats. They didn't care. I never got it from them. From the Young Guns and all of that, I never got it from them either. You know, and the Philly guys, I never got it from them. Even from Dame. Like, it was one point in time where Beans was living up here. He was on house arrest at Dame's crib.
Yeah.
And I was staying there every day.
Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know our friend Sophia?
Sophia.
Sophia Rossi.
I know that name.
She was Dame's assistant.
Hell yeah, I remember Sophia.
And so she stayed at Dame's the crib, place while free and being.
Hell yeah, I remember Sophia. Hell yeah, I remember her. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, so I was there every day. We would go there. This is around, like, Jay has already started the 40-40 club. So it's like, we would still go see Jay. Like, I mean, it was a point in time where Jay stopped coming to the office. You know what I mean? Because everybody that Dame was firing, Jay would hire the next day. Like, Jay fired Carlene. I mean, Dame fired Carlene. Jay hired her. Dame fired John Manilli. Jay hired him. Dame fired Lenny S. Jay hired him. It's like, so I was kind of seeing a sort of separation, but I didn't think anything of it. And at this time, I'm a young dude. I could care less. Like, I'm thinking this is going to last forever. You know what I mean? I'm thinking this is going to last forever. And it did.
Spoiler alert.
Right. Yo, it's so funny because with Dave has this thing where he always says, well, had I known that, like, if I'd have known that, you know what I mean? But it really hurt me because at this time, like I said, with Rockefeller, I never really facilitated any relationships with myself outside of Rockefeller. So all these people that's calling me from Def Jam, you know, for Beanie Siegel, for the Young Guns, all of that, when everything breaks up, I don't have any connections, really. You know what I mean? All I had is Rockefeller, and it doesn't exist anymore.
You had all the names on the sheet.
Right. Oh, man. I wish the names meant something at that time, man, because maybe I'd have been all right. But it really affected me because, you know, just back to what I was saying before, growing as a young man, you know, I started getting tattoos on my hands, my neck. You know, I didn't really care about having a regular job because of the way, you know, the music industry is set up. It's the only, it's one of the only things where young black men could really be who they are, you know, unfiltered, and make tons of money and be able to take care of themselves and their family. So for me, I thought that I was going to be able to do that, and it's like, nah, back to the drawing board. You know what I mean? So it hurt me in that regard because I had to go, I had to figure it out. It was like really disheartening for me to be drinking Cristal and
Armadale.
Cristal. I'm 19, 20 years old. I get to hang around Beyonce and, you know what I mean, and all these different people, and I gotta go back and get a regular job.
You were living backstage. Like, that was,
I was, that's, yeah, yeah, I got exactly what I wanted. Yeah. You know what I mean? But, you know, that setback, you know, that setback, when setbacks happen, is either one or two things that's gonna happen. You're either gonna succumb to it and let it take you over, or you're gonna fight through it.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I had succumbed to it for a bit, and I was down, and, you know, my mom was like, yo, like, shit, that was their money, not yours. You still gotta do what you gotta do. So I had got, you know, I got another job. Ironically, back in the mailroom, mm-hmm, at a place not so cool. You know what I mean?
Which was what?
Pfizer Pharmaceuticals.
Oh, that's very cool. Man. Free Viagra, you can flip that.
Yo, I wish I had, yo. Now you're making me think differently. I could have been on that time.
Had I known that.
Had I known, you know what I mean? Shout out to Dave. But at this time, I got a bunch of tattoos. Like, you know, people are looking at me different. You know what I mean? I'm getting calls, yo, could you wear shirts to cover up? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Your tattoos. And like, it just was really hard, man. It was hard. And, you know, I went and worked every regular job I could do after that. You know what I mean? I was trying to do a lot of different things. It led me to working for Channel 11. You know what I mean? So I started working for Channel 11 in the mailroom there and doing office services, which meant I was just changing lights. That was my only skill. Like, I had no skill other than mailroom.
Well, the only skill that they could see.
That they could see, right. Yeah. The only skill I had on paper for a resume was I deliver mail. You know what I mean?
See, a lot of people think this is like a very like comedic podcast, but yeah, it ends up being a very inspirational podcast.
Yeah,
so,
right, yeah.
So me saying the only skill you can see.
That's right, right,
very
right.
Inspirational.
Yeah, that's what I started doing again. And again, I found myself at a point where I'm like, this is not me. Like, I mean, Young Chris is still signed to... Because once Rockefeller fell apart, they still had Rockefeller, but it was no more staff. They gave everybody a pink slip.
Yeah.
Once Jay took over as a president of Def Jam, you know, they gave everybody a pink slip.
It's a very Cameron move. You get it.
Pink slip. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? See, back to the comedy. You guys.
Right, right, right. But, you know, Rockefeller ended up just being a name. And, you know, I was still helping Young Chris out. You know what I mean? Because that's my brother. So we're trying to figure it out all over again. We don't know. Like I said, they came from a really pacified situation where everybody woke up. It's like people that wake up and work at Foot Locker every day, every day, every day. And then they're like, Foot Locker is no longer Foot Locker. Payless is taking over.
Right.
So the people who are used to Foot Locker protocol, Foot Locker, how they do releases, now you got to abide by Payless's rules. You know what I mean? Which I don't mean to talk about Def Jam like that. But that's kind of how it went. So none of the people who were at Def Jam at the time were invested in the Young Guns because they didn't see them since the time they was 15 and they signed there, growing to be 21 and putting out their debut album and having success. That's why you can see the difference in the Brothers From Another release and Bleak's 504 release, 534 release, yeah, and all of that, and the Free At Last. All the releases never met up to the stature of the prior Rockefeller releases because the people weren't invested, mm-hmm, in the brand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Jay was Jay. Once they got Jay, they didn't care about nobody else.
Right.
You know what I mean? So at this time, I'm still trying to figure it out, and, you know, I get laid off from one job, and then I get rehired. You know, when I got laid off, I took, I speak about this a lot, like I took the little bit of money I had in the pension, which what the hell was that? It was nothing. I took that money and I invested in myself. I bought myself a MacBook. I bought an LLC, which was Cool Mentality Clothing. I started trying to do streetwear. You know what I mean? I started getting into that because I started finding a real like liking for streetwear. And I was like, you know, if I'm not going to be doing music, I want to do something where I could work in entertainment, get product on artists, do dope collabs with them. This is the time where Diamond Supply, it's taking, yeah, off, you know what I mean? And I'm watching all the success they're having with the Currencies and the Wiz and, yeah, all of that. Shout out to my man Brock Marciano.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Brock was a guy that he was at Diamond and, like, he gave me a lot of pointers on Cool Mentality and just what I needed to do. And I did those, and it didn't work for me again. You know what I mean? So I got laid off again, and then after this, I was like, yo, I got to get back in music, man. Like, I got to, if I'm going to do Cool Mentality, I got to get into music, make some money off of music, and put that through Cool Mentality. Mm-hmm. That was my mindset. I was like, I kept trying to go away from what I was good at. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And so, do you have a kid at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
yeah.
another mouth to feed. And,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And think of. And
right, yo, I had a moment. Yo, it's crazy. I had a moment, like, when my son was born, he might have been, like, 6 or 7 months, and I looked at him, like, one day he was asleep. Yo, all this be like movie shit. Like, yeah, I'd be like, yeah. man, I can write this in a movie.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I broke down crying. And the reason why I broke down crying was because I was like, damn, I never got my diploma. I started having second guesses. Like, damn, I should have went to school. I should have did. Because I'm like, I can't offer my son shit. If I die today, he ain't got nothing. His mother ain't got nothing. He just got my name. You know what I mean? And I was like, it's nothing I can. I just looked at it like, damn, like, now I'm a father. My life is no longer about me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, but my son was the driving force of me saying I got to do something. Because I didn't want to be like, just black people have this thing where they think that you, once you become a parent, that your life is over. You can't do anything cool anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Oh, you got a kid. You can't hang out. You can't take a trip to nowhere. You can't. Why can't I do that? And then have the experience and then bring my kid there. So that's the kind of father I wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just was like, you know what? I want to do some cool stuff with my son, you know what I mean, my kid one day. I got to figure this out, you know what I mean? And then that led me to getting back into music. And another one of my close friends, I was trying to help out, you know, all the Philly guys, and, you know, no disrespect to them, but he's like, yo, you got to get away from them. Because as long as you're trying to do, they can't see what you see. You know what I mean? As long as you're trying to keep doing that, you're never going to go, because they're kind of stuck where they were. And it's hard to break somebody out of that mentality of the year they had the most success. You know what I mean? So for me, I was like, yo, I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah. Tell us how you find Dave East. How he comes into your life.
The way I find Dave East is I had a few other artists that I was trying to work. They didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
The first person that told me I should do management was my producer, Buddha. You know, Buddha from Buddha and Grands. You know what I mean? At the time, he had already produced for 50 Cent, a few people, and he asked me, could I manage him? Him and then my man Hovain.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Hovain was telling me I should do management. So, you know, I'm at this time, I'm doing anything I could do to make a couple dollars, because I got laid off from my job. You know, now I got a kid. I got another kid on the way. I'm trying to figure things out for myself. So I'm hosting shows at SOBs. Making a little couple hundred dollars, you know what I mean, per show. I didn't want to do it, but I'm like, shit, I got to do whatever I can to pay a bill. So I'm doing that, and my man Jamie, that I crossed back in the day, right? No, Jamie, he played D1 ball against Dave, him and my man G. Coles, and they grew up against him, you know what I mean, playing ball when they was kids, and they was like, yo, you ever heard of this kid Dave? He from 1199. And I was like, nah, like, you know, I'm older than them, so I don't really know kids, like, that are younger than me, of course, and I don't hang with them unless they know Jamie.
Or, yeah, you're crossing.
Unless they know Jamie, you know what I mean? Unless I'm crossing, right? So they were like, yo, yeah, we play ball against him, but he rapped. They like, yo, he's dope. Like, he could spit. So I'm hosting a show, me and my man Puma from Black Ink.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see Dave East on the paper. I'm like, yo, who is he? They like, the tall kid, right? Of course. Like, so I go over to him, like, yo, my name Wayno. He's like, oh, word, I know who you are, you know what I mean? I was like, yo, I'm gonna introduce you out on the show. Come out, do your thing, you know what I mean? So that was, might have been like my third or fourth show I had hosted, because I was a little bit seasoned with it.
Who was headlining, by the way?
It was nobody. It was no headliner. It was like one of those New York showcases, yep, mm-hmm, where they just group all the New York people into, mm-hmm, the same shit, you know what,
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which we totally stay away from now, because right, it kind of boxes you in, you totally know what I mean? Yeah. Like, can I say that for all New York artists? Do not box yourself into just New York.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like, Young Thug is not just an Atlanta guy.
Right.
You know,
no, he's
mean?
A New York guy. Young Thug is bringing back New York.
He's bringing back New York. That's crazy, but he is, right? But, so, you know, he went on, and they rap, and I come from Beanie Siegel and Jay and the Young Guns, rappers, everybody rapped. And I just was like, wow, like he's saying the same things that other people said, but it's the way he's saying them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yo, this kid is ill. Like, you know what I mean? So when he got off the stage, you know, we chopped it up, him and his man Bully. Bully was managing him at the time. And, you know, Bully, like, we just chopped it up. Like, yo, I was like, yo, whatever y'all, like, whatever help y'all need. I'm not even thinking about managing him. I'm just like, yo, whatever help y'all need, y'all got me. So me and Dave exchanged numbers, and he asked me to mentor him. And I thought that was pretty courageous for, like, he was 22, 23 when I met him. I thought that was pretty ill for a kid to be, you know, that age. You know, hip-hop is a lot of arrogance. They think, like, especially, like, right. I say, young black, like, men, we think we don't need help, yeah, with nothing.
Right.
I don't need your help. I don't need nobody. You know what I mean? I don't need no label. I don't need this. So he came to me like, yo, I need a mentor. You know what I mean? And I was like, I'm down.
I think that's so important, by the way, because you're right. Like, people do want to be stubborn. People just want to, like, think that they can do it all themselves.
Yeah.
But it's not about, like, just going to someone and asking that person directly for a job.
Right.
It's asking for advice, because you never know where that could take you. And maybe they know someone who could use your skills,
right,
or do
right.
something that's not that person.
Right, absolutely. And, I mean, the thing for me with Dave, at the time, I was a brand ambassador for Reebok. You know what I mean? And for me, everybody that I have to work with, I'm a family guy, so you're going to have to be around my kids. You're going to have to be around my moms, everybody. So Dave would, you know, I was giving him sneakers. I was seeing him through Reebok, so it'd be days where I wasn't around. I'd be like, yo, go to my mom crib. And my mom met him. My mom was like, yo, I love him. Yeah. Like, he's dope. Because my, yo, Beanie Siegel has gone to my mom's crib. The Young Guns, all of them have
invited,
gone.
Right?
Invited, right? Yeah, right, right, right. Invited, you know what I mean? Not Beanie Siegel, Desert Eagle. You know what I mean? But now they've all gone to my mom's crib, you know what I mean? So he got my mom's stamp of approval. Like, yo, I mess with him. Like, he's a cool dude. Like, I like him. And, you know, for a year, we just talked. You know what I mean? Like, I befriended him. I would go chill with him wherever he was at. I would go pull up on him and, you know, we go get something to eat. Like, we built as men.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what made me, like, really believe in him more than his music. Because as he's just like, yo, Wayne, I want people to know I think I'm good. You know what I mean? He's like, I think I'm dope. And I want people to know that. And, like, maybe a year and a half of me knowing him, I just was like, yo.
You took the plunge.
Right. I just was like, yo, what do I have to lose?
Yeah.
I ain't got shit. He ain't got shit. I was like, yo, what you think about me managing you? You know what I mean? And he was like, you serious? Like, when I told him that, he was like, you serious? I was like, yeah, like, I want to manage you. He's like, all right, I'm down. Like, what's good? And then he texted me after, like, yo, let's go. Like, he was hype about it. So from there, we started working.
And look at you now.
Hey, man. Yo, it's... Boy, I tell you, like, them setbacks, man. Like, I tell people all the time, like, a lot of people always say to me, yo, what would you say for a person like me trying to be in your shoes? I can't say that you could be in my shoes. Like, you have to craft those own shoes and get your own laces and put your socks on and put them on yourself, because
you got to pass the mom test.
You got to, not only that, I mean, you got to go through, like, I've went through a lot, man. It's times where I sat in the crib and I wouldn't even come outside because I couldn't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what am I going to do? I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to reach my 30s and be a guy. Like, I was like, yo, I've come too far to quit. I don't care if it's going to, I will die trying to get this, because I've come too far to go back. Like, I thought, like, how my son going to look at me? You know what I mean? If I tell him he could be whatever he want and I don't be what I want. You know what I mean? Like, I don't take the steps to become who I want to be. How is he going to look at me? Like, he could be like, damn, like, I ain't listening to you. Like, you ain't even, that advice you giving me, you ain't even take for yourself.
Because
he's going to be like me. So, for me, I just was like, yo, I told my producer, if we could get one guy that'll just kind of understand, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, then, you know, we'd be out of here. And that one guy was Dave. You know what I mean?
You did it for Dave. You did it for Cam. You did it for...
for the culture, B.
You did it
from the heart.
But now, you know what? Your son can look at you and be like, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
And all I need from you is just some tennises from...
Right, some tennises, man. And my... Yo, he's lit, man. Like, somebody sends me a video one day of my son, A Boogie's at some Jordan event, and my son is there rapping word for word with A Boogie. Like, he reaps the benefits of what it is I do. You know what I mean? My children, like, you know what I mean? I only have one kid, but, like... I don't have only one kid, but like my children, they reap the benefits of what it is I do. My family reaps the benefits of what I do. And for me, it was like this. It was like, I just want to be dope. Like, I was watching like Kevin Lyles, Irv Gotti, Steve Stout, Dame Dash, Chris Lighty, all of these dudes that are behind the scenes. I got a chance to like to see them at one point or another. And all I'm doing is everything they showed me I could do. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I credited Dame. Without any of them dudes, like, I've never met Steve Stout. I've met Kevin Lyles a lot of times. You know what I mean? I met Lior Cohen. All of them. Julie Grimwald. Yeah. All of these people that are behind the scenes that move and shake. you know, if it wasn't for them, down to the people that are my peers, a Shari Bryan, a Steve Carlos, a Young Sav, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? All of these guys, like, they showed me what I could do.
Sycamore.
Sycamore, yeah, that's another guy.
Amir Abassi.
Yeah, man, Amir named my son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Really?
Like, yeah, he named my son. Like, you know, with me, I'm Muslim. So, you know, Amir is a guy that's taught me a lot of different things about Islam, and he gave me the book that had my son's name in it, so that's why I credit him for naming my son. You know what I mean? And one thing I love about hip-hop is it's a fraternity. It's a tremendous fraternity, and all of us are pieces on it. Whether it's, you know, the guy who has the one record 1 year, yo, it's going to be ill to see the people who will one-hit wonders do, like, a show 20 years from now. We're going to remember these times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think we're all, like, big pieces on it, and it's like, in order to make it in it, man, you got to just believe in yourself and the people that instill in you. A lot of people seen things in me that I couldn't see in myself, and that's what helped me out.
So yeah. It's your favorite thing about hip hop. My favorite thing about hip hop is that he never goes to his office, and so I just see all the CDs.
Take all those CDs. That's exactly right. Yo,
right.
Bueno,
right.
Thanks so much.
Man, thank you for having me.
Congratulations on everything.
Oh man, thank you. Man. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Yeah.
Go. That's a wrap.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was dope.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about A Waste of Time with It's the Real, if people want to go through our whole catalog on iTunes, where can they go?
You can always go to SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time, or you can go to iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are also on Fullscreen, fullscreen.com/It's the Real. Watch all of our episodes there.
Yeah, you got a full month free if you go right now and subscribe.
You get to watch all of our episodes a week earlier than when they come out on SoundCloud and everywhere else.
Yes, yes.
And you can also find us on Instagram, It's the Real. You can find us on Twitter, It's the Real. You can find us on Facebook, It's the Real. You can also rate, subscribe, comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, anywhere in the internet.
You know, we had this nice run where people were commenting a lot. We sort of stalled there. If people can go and comment again, I don't know, just let us know how we're doing on iTunes, on SoundCloud.
Well, people comment on SoundCloud a lot.
We can always use more.
Always.
Let's go. Jeff, this podcast will not survive unless more people tell more people who tell more people.
Yeah, Ponzi scheming.
Do you have more people to tell?
I want to tell the good people at KitKat.
At KitKat?
Yeah, they sent us a bunch of KitKats in the mail.
But this was before Chance the Rapper did a KitKat commercial.
Yes. We were early on the KitKat train.
This is
as of a month ago.
This is, by the way, Halloween season. So shout out to KitKat for real.
Shout out to our dentist.
Yeah, there we go.
Shout out to
KitKat.
Yeah, KitKat. They sent us a bunch of KitKats in the mail. They were a little melted, and they came in all like weird shapes. But you want to know what? Still delicious. Hard to eat, but still delicious.
They turned into a giant KitKat, and I'm not even kidding.
Yeah,
our refrigerator is it's bigger than a big KitKat. It's like a
yeah, because it can geo like into like weird shapes because it was all melted. And KitKat. So I had to eat one of them with a knife and fork. But you want to know what?
It's like a
still
chisel.
Good.
Yeah. Chisel. I would like to shout out our good friend Justin Fleischer, known as
The Fleisch.
The Fleisch. Wow. Justin is on his way to California. The young man is moving west. Shout out to him. He was a big part of our breakfast meetings that we did every month with our friends Alex and Leah and Matt. He will be missed, but he'll be back very soon and pretty often.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest place he'll be missed is in the bald guy Alex Tomorrow's office, where we can always find him. Anyway, Jeff.
Well, actually, before we, like, really, really close out.
Yeah.
If anybody besides KitKat wants to send us stuff, it's always, like, you know.
We're accepting candy.
Accepting candy.
We're accepting money.
Yep.
You can always send money our way. Probably not through the mail, because that's illegal.
Is it?
If you send money, I believe that's illegal.
Then how does Aunt Jane send us money for, like, birthdays and stuff?
By check, Jeff. I don't know what kind of cash you're getting in the mail, but that
it is not illegal.
Can
someone please tell me out there if it's illegal to send cash through the mail? I don't think that's true.
It is true. If anyone, send us Dave Matthews Bands.
What's that?
Dave Matthews Bands.
What's that?
Dave Matthews Bands.
What's that?
SoundCloud.com/It's the Real. Check that out as soon as possible. Jeff, want to do this again next week?
Yeah.
What's that?
That's the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, a waste of time.
Yeah.